All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from New York City on this, the 27th day of August, 2019. It's certainly been a good day for gold. It's up some 15 bucks. Silver is up about 50 cents. That's about 3% on the day. So obviously some things are starting to stir in the precious metals markets, which, of course, this show is focused on to a great extent. Before I talk about more about today's show, let me remind you, I am the editor of Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. People are finding this newsletter to be of considerable value now, given the fact that we're actually making a nice bit of money on some of the calls that I've made in this in my newsletter. Not necessarily my fault. We have some wind at our backs, and we've made some really fascinating picks, and some of these stocks are finding a lot of gold and silver in the ground, and it really is a very exciting time. Miningstocks.com, you can sign up for it by going to you can sign up for my newsletter, Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks, I should say, by going to miningstocks.com. Also like to encourage you to consider signing up for Chen Lin's letter. Chen will be with me in a few minutes from now. ChenPicks.com is the place to go for what to buy, what is Chen buying, what is Chen selling. That's his newsletter, and he comes out with that. Whenever there's some important news on his recommendations, he will send emails out to his subscribers. ChenPicks.com is a place to go to sign up for Chen's letter. I do want to thank each of you for listening to this show, making it one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. Also want to encourage you to keep your questions, comments, whatever comments you have, send them along to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. And we must thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Sponsors for today's show, Klondike Gold, Novo Resources, Radisson Mining Resources, and Great Bear Resources. Four companies, I might add, that I'm very proud to have as sponsors. They're all doing very well in their exploration efforts. I do want to thank each of you for listening to this show again. And again, keep your questions and comments coming along to us at questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. I've titled today's show, Rocket Fuel for Gold, Impending Deeply Negative Interest Rates. Alistair McLeod, Chen Lin, also is with me today. Michael will not be able to be with us, but in just a moment I will pass along some of his views that he related to his subscribers this past weekend as they pertain to the markets that we follow weekly here on this show. Alistair McLeod wrote in an essay that he wrote a couple of weeks back, he said, and I quote, "Growing evidence of a severe global recession is sure to provoke more aggressive monetary policies from central banks. They had hoped to have the leeway to cut interest rates significantly after normalizing them. That has not happened. Thus, as the recession intensifies, central banks will see no alternative to deeper negative rates, to keep their governments and banks afloat by eliminating borrowing costs and inflating bond prices. It will be the last throw of the fiat money dice, and if pursued, will ultimately end in the death of them. Gold and Bitcoin prices are now beginning to detect deeper negative rates and the adverse consequences for fiat currencies," end of quote. So that is a topic that we'll be talking to Alistair about in the second half of today's show. Chen Lin just returned from China, Australia, and other Asian countries where he traveled on vacation with his family. He also visited Novo Resources, which I'm sure he'll tell us about. He's going to be with us right after the first commercial break. And he has an ongoing dialogue with the former countrymen of his in China. So he has a very unique perspective regarding the existing American-Chinese relationship, which is not very good, to say the least, these days under the Trump presidency. That and other topics I will explore with Chen, so I'm really looking forward to what he has to say about a couple of his favorite stock picks as well. Given Michael's absence, let me just pass along a couple of his comments from his 360 weekend letter that he sent out this past Sunday, August the 25th. Michael said he can sense that among most gold and mining investors and technical analysts, taking profits is more on their minds now with respect to gold than holding for a long-time position in the yellow metal. He noted, and I quote, "Technical reasons upon technical reasons, usually by orthodox technical analysts, have been raised over the past few months as to why one should take profits and exit gold. If you examine daily price charts of gold and GDX, you will see a repeated behavior on the part of the past few months. Several days of downside occur, just enough to spook everyone, then bam, a single day upswing that erases the prior multi-day correction, and the shorts are licking their chops." Michael noted that last Friday was just such a day, and he also said on this show a few times, and I quote what he said in his letter, "There might be some justification for profit-taking once gold gets into the mid to upper 1500s, and as GDX, gold miner ETF, gets into the low 30s, but such correction, once reaching those levels, is unlikely to stop gold from ultimately reaching the simple price-based swing objective of its massive, complex head-and-shoulders bottom. In this case, momentum fully endorses the orthodoxy that the swing objective for gold is $1,700. Then Michael also wrote another thought on how to assess gold as it relates to the topic of the first page of his letter last week. He said, and I quote, "If gold reaches into the mid to upper 1500s, and at the same time you see the S&P 500 breaking down through our minefield of numbers specified on page one of this week's letter, then think twice about exiting gold. If the S&P 500 also cracks those two layered structures, then gold will very likely be even more aggressive in its vertical advance." And he mentions also the same is likely for the T-bonds. Michael continued saying this past weekend, and I quote, "When if the S&P 500 triggers our annual momentum number, you can probably count the days on one hand that are left on the upside in gold and T-bonds and on the downside in the S&P 500. At such a juncture, we would not be surprised by anything major on the upside that gold might produce, with speed and drama in a handful of days." Michael concluded his discussion on gold by saying, and I quote, "No, we are not abandoning our monitoring of gold for a potential mid-trend correction, but we are faced with the probability that those charts of gold and T-bonds on the prior page of this letter will not end their verticality until the inverse market produces its downside resolution. And just a thought, a major one, when thinking about exiting gold and related investments, watch the S&P 500. Whether Michael's, that's the end of the quote from Michael. And that was with Michael's permission. I just shared with you what he wrote about gold in this weekly missive. And keep in mind that those are the kinds of extensive commentary that you get from Michael on all different kinds of markets that he covers. And I would just strongly suggest that if you're a serious investor, you go to olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com, to profit from Michael's excellent work. Well, we do have to go to commercial break now. But don't go away, because I'll be right back with Chen Lin, who has some very important insights about Chinese-American relationships and also some very important insights on a couple of his favorite stock picks. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Chen Lin.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really glad to have with me my friend, partner, Chen Lin. It's really good to have him with us again. Chen has a remarkable career. He hasn't been on the show, it's been a few weeks at least, and we should probably have him on more often if we could find the space and time. And that's because he has had such a very good track record in his investment career. Both for his subscribers as well as himself and his family. He publishes What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling, and you can sign up for it by going to chenpicks.com, chenpicks.com. So if you're a serious investor, I like serious investors to go to Michael Oliver for technical analysis, and I like serious investors to go to Chen for his top picks, and he really has some great interesting ideas. Of course, I also like serious investors to come in subscribe to Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks as well, but that's another story. Chen, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, Dave. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm really glad to have you, and I really want to hear what you have to say about Chinese-American relations. Now that you've just been over in China with you and your family on a vacation, not just to China, but Australia, I think Tibet and other places, you have a lot of contacts in Beijing. What is your sense about the current trade disputes between the U.S. and China? Will they get settled anytime soon? And if so, what might that mean for the markets?
Hi, Jay. Yeah, I discussed those topics extensively in my newsletter in the past year. So from my perspective, from what I saw, unfortunately, this dispute probably won't be resolved this year. That's what I see. They probably will they just drag it and drag it into next year because there's so much distrust between on both sides, right? Between Chinese and the Trump administration, and then they recently were saying oh, Chinese called to ask to negotiate, and China immediately said no, we never call you. So it's getting to that kind of. Yeah. Confrontational, so it's pretty hard. It take time to heal. And good news for gold investor is, I think I put that in my newsletter a while ago. So if there's a deal between China and United States, gold could drop by $100 just instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Last time there was some delay of tariff, gold dropped by $50. So yeah. I don't see we will have this kind of a heart attack for the rest of this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you think there's nothing much going to happen there on the front for a while. You think the Chinese are keeping an eye on the American politics, perhaps, to see if who might be the Democrats' choice and whether they can beat Trump?
Right. I think they want to see who are will be the Democratic candidate, and if they're, you know, it's better to negotiate with Democrat or with the Trump or whatever can get the best deal. And, you know, as the election get closer, a lot of things can happen. So I think they just going to drag it and just delay everything. Just we just, you know, Happy New Year, you know, see you 2020.
Happy New Year. Well, let's hope it's a Happy New Year. All right. Well, gold and silver, I mean, they look pretty bullish right now. To what extent do you think they're related to this Chinese issue? Are there other things going on? And, well, what is your outlook for gold and silver right now? I know you just mentioned what's going on now between China and the U.S. is probably very bullish for gold and silver. But in general, what are your thoughts near term and longer term for gold and silver?
I'm very, you know, very excited. You know, once the trade war broke out, I put in, that was last year, I put in my letter, this is the best trade is gold, right? Best trade for this trade war. Because when there's a dispute and then people got scared and then they go to bond, potentially, you know, and then there's some investor will go to gold. And yeah. Then while the trade war drag on, you know, there's a lot of Chinese rich people, right? They're holding all these Chinese local currency, watching them depreciate, which they really don't like. And then they're wondering, what should I do? So there's some people are start thinking to put some money go. I don't see too much movement, too much money going in yet. So when they start really getting into gold and silver, I think we'll see much more appreciation.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of silver, one of your top picks for some time is a very interesting company. It's taking forever for things to develop, but I'm talking about Cerro de Pasco. And that is a company that has it's involved in pulling together a very interesting project in Peru and joining up with a major mining company, global mining company, or joining up but at least working a deal with that company. Can you talk to us a little bit about Cerro de Pasco and tell us a little bit about what is going on there, what the merger, the deal that's going on, and where that stands now, Chen?
Well, last Sunday, there's a TV report in Peru, prime time, like our 60 Minutes, and they mentioned Cerro de Pasco. They specifically mentioned Cerro de Pasco will take over everything. That means the whole historical mining district. So that's a very exciting moment. As we know, Cerro de Pasco used to be the one of the greatest mining company in the world. They were listed in the New York Stock Exchange until Peruvian government took it over, nationalized it in the 70s when there's the Vietnam Wars and United States couldn't keep an eye on it, and they took it over and then they drove it to the ground. So, but it was one of the greatest mines, and it was built, funded by, originally listed on New York Stock Exchange by J.P. Morgan, right? That's the early 1900s. So, and it's a very exciting project, huge resource, huge infrastructure, everything is there. And if the TV report is correct, as of last Sunday, in the Peruvian national TV, then Cerro de Pasco will take over everything. Right now, the owner of that project is Glencore, and it's a subsidiary. Like Glencore currently is current owner of this giant project.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, right now is we just wait. I would advise the investors, the shareholder, just give it, you know, a few more weeks, and then let's see the deal. You know, hopefully, because it's getting so close, and then it's mentioning on the national TV, so it could happen very soon.
I see. And so, Chen, as I understand it, there's a lot of above-ground material. It's not like they have to go deep into the earth to mine this material, but it's already on surface. Do I have that right?
Exactly. They own the historical tailing and the stockpile. So they have that. And then the Glencore and its subsidiary owns the giant mining, you know, the mill or the other processing plant, and then all the pit and all the other resource. But for this Cerro de Pasco right now, the tailing can be very, very rich. Right? Historically, this area, you mine easily 10 gram per ton gold, you know, a few hundred gram per ton silver, and quite a few percent of copper. Recovery is quite low. at the beginning, right? And then even you assume 90% recovery, which is, you know, I don't think it's possible, it's still very rich tailing. Right. So they just need to pump the tailing up and then go through the processing plant and then get the metal out.
Yeah, and of course, long ago, the technology wasn't there for the kind of recoveries that metallurgical recoveries that most mines are getting these days. They would just leave, they'd mine the high grade stuff and leave a lot of metal behind. So Chen, it's not just silver here. We've got some gold, I think. We got some copper. We might have some other base metals, right?
Right. The historical, when they first started, was a gold mine, gold and copper mine. So they believe at the tailing, especially lower bottom, will be gold rich. It will be gold and copper rich and transition to silver and gold and then other base metal.
I see.
They will drill this. They saw that they have planned to drill out the historical resource. Total is 90 million tons. You know, itself is a mine, 90 million tons.
Oh, absolutely. Should mention that it's trades in Canada under the symbol CDPR, I believe, and you can buy it in the U.S. as I have on the over-the-counter market as well, CPPRF in the U.S. So it's a very exciting story. Okay, Chen, well, moving on to there's a biotech. Let's go to Novo first, because you were just over in Australia. You met up with Quentin Henning, you and your family, visited their project there in Western Australia. What are your thoughts about Quentin Henning's project now? You know, the stock far below its highs a couple of years ago, 2017, when it made these discoveries, these huge nuggets. And so the market seems to be sort of ho-hum. It seems to be trading around, give or take, $2 in U.S. money these days. But what are your thoughts about this? Are they ignoring a good story, or might there not be as much as we thought there might be there at one time?
Oh, I think people just don't understand it. All right, when they first they announced, I think it was at the Denver Go Show, they do the real-time broadcast, webcast. Then people got really excited, so there's a high grade and, you know, those type of vein type or some nugget type of discovery. It's not. Right, the discovery is relatively low grade, but at the surface, easy to mine. And then you see the recent press release. You don't need water. That's very important. There is existing technology. You can do a magnetic field or X-ray to pick all these gold nuggets out. And it's very at the surface. About we are talking about 1, 2, 3, 4 meters thick.
Mm-hmm.
So potentially. I would envision you can have a one machine, right? Scoop up the dirt and then go through that the processing unit, pick up the gold and then put it right back. So it's just one machine, just continues running that, and you know that's what I believe Sumitomo is putting money in right now. Sumitomo is paying the bill.
Yes, they are.
Sumitomo they put in like 20 or 30 whatever the number is in the press release for up to 40% for a few years. So they are putting it because they're very interested in designing those machines, right?
Uh-huh.
You just pick it up and then processing, and then gold come out, and then dirt cover it. It's on a desert, right? Perfect place. So and then the size is enormous. If this works, we are talking about hundreds of millions of ounces of gold. I truly believe that. So that's why I put in my report. I think it's a BRIEX 2.0, but actually, ironically, it could be a real BRIEX.
I mean, this is the insights that Quentin Henning brought to this project was a massive scale. And again, it comes as a result of his genius, really, his ability to perceive how the Witwaters Rand was laid down and how massive it was and why there could be so much gold in one place on Earth. So this is just a story that I'm extremely excited about yet. That's for sure. Well, Chen, also another one that switching gears here a little bit. You have done extremely well with your biotech stocks, and Acasti is one I think that you really like a lot. Tell us a little bit about Acasti Pharmaceuticals, ACST in Canada. I believe it also trades under that symbol in the U.S. What can you tell us about this story now, and are you still a big believer and an investor in that one?
Yes, hi. Yes, hi, Jay. I remember we were talking about last year. I was at Beaver Creek in Denver, I think, Colorado Spring. I mentioned in Acacia. At that time, we were trading at below $1. Even with such a terrible market, it went to $3 a couple months ago, okay? As people start to see its tremendous potential. Right now, it came down pretty hard because of general market. Right now, it's about $1.70, something still much higher, more than double of it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
The key catalyst for them is their data, which will read out in December. Okay, and then to make things more complicated, there's another company called Amarin. They have this great product based on fish oil. Okay.
Yes.
They're supposed to get FDA approval in September, but the market is huge. It's a $1 billion market a year. So basically, they could take away billions of dollars from the major farmer. So then FDA throw them a curveball, say, okay, well, I need some time. You know, I don't want to make a decision in September, so let some expert to talk about. So they have an AdCon in November, and then they have a decision in December. So delay by 3 months, and then the Amarin stock just tanked. So that's part of the attribute to the Acacia's, you know, going down, the recent weakness. So for the Amarin, there's all these people, there's some conspiracy theory even mentioning because major farmers are so scared about Amarin coming into this space, take away their revenue, so they kind of force FDA to delay it. It's possible, I do not know. But I think they will open up for discussion in for expert in November. So people look at the benefit, they will likely approve that. And then next will be Acacia. Acacia data will come out in December and January, my belief. Okay, I've been using crude oil for decades. I have my family on crude oil. I have my friends on crude oil. I believe, firmly believe, their data will be better than Amarin. So people will look at it, supposedly Amarin successful. Right now, this stock market cap is billions of dollars. So it even maybe go higher, right? Then people will compare to Acacia. Acacia maybe one, you know, maybe 5% of Amarin market cap, maybe less, maybe a few percent. Then people will ask why this is so cheap. So I believe when the data come out, people will get very excited. Acacia can go much, much higher. But right now you have to go through all these difficult market conditions first. So that's, there's no way. Amarin is $5 billion market cap. Okay, Acacia is, I think, $100 million, something like that.
Very interesting. So with the fish oil has, as I understand it, not only benefits for joints, but also has some benefits with respect to blood pressure, cholesterol, I guess, huh?
Right. Mostly it's for reducing cholesterol. So what Amarin found there is reducing cholesterol reduced the stroke, the chance of stroke and heart and all the other things, which is very obvious, right? You reduce cholesterol. So that because they prove it works, then all these insurance, you know, that doctor can prescribe, insurance will cover it. It's not very expensive drug. It's a few hundred dollars maybe per month, those kind of range, okay? Not very expensive, not an extraordinary heart surgery, those type of expense, but they can be very, very big market, and then we'll take away from statin, take away from other drug from major pharma. That's what my understanding. Okay, that could be the pushback. Why FDA delayed the Amarin's approval?
Lots of money being lost by the big boys. If that
works, there will be a lot
of
money will be lost once they got approved. Exactly. And then they have a little bit controversy for their placebo. You know, they use mineral oil, 4 gram per day mineral oil, and then controversy is that 4 gram per day mineral oil actually increase your cholesterol or something. The argument's very weak. I don't think it's a problem. And then Cassie has no placebo problem at all because they're using cornstarch, right? So you get all these details, but and the other, in addition, Cassie also looking for at the secondary endpoint is to reduce your blood sugar. So think about it. If you can both reduce cholesterol and blood sugar, you have a home run. You have something very inexpensive and very helpful to your health, right?
Yeah, and Chen, just we have to go now. But what is the market cap of Acacia then about?
Acacia right now about $140
million. $140 million.
About $5 billion.
Compared to $5 billion. Interesting.
Yeah,
fascinating.
So my point is,
well, you know,
Amarin, Amarin will do well. It could even go higher, maybe 10 billion, and but Acacia will go even higher because if they have a better product, right? But we'll see in a few months.
Well, very interesting. Free markets, of course. Governments a lot of times get in the way of free markets, and that's for sure not just in areas of pharmaceuticals, but as we're going to talk to Alistair McLeod in a couple of minutes, certainly the government gets in the way in terms of the financial markets as well very often. So, Chen, great hearing from you again, and let me just suggest to my listeners, ChenPicks.com. You got a little flavor of the detail that Chen gets involved with. The reason he's been so successful with his investments is he really does pay attention to details, and you know the devil is in the details, as they say. So, Chen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And we'll do it again sometime soon. Well, folks, we are going to break now, but don't go away because Alistair McLeod will be with me. You don't want to miss hearing what Alistair has to say on a very, very, very important subject. Interest rates heading to negative territory. My goodness, what is that going to do? It makes no sense whatsoever to most. Only the people in the universities seem to make any sense of it. But in the real world, it doesn't make any sense at all. And Alistair will be here to talk about deeply negative nominal rates are on their way. We'll be right back with Alistair McLeod.
A gold rush has begun. Recently, three of the largest gold mining companies announced strategic acquisitions in the Yukon Territories. Ahead of them was a group who had already consolidated the key claims covering the historic Klondike Gold Rush into one company, aptly named Klondike Gold Corp. Led by a team of accomplished geoscientists, the company is steadily advancing exploration to reveal the rich source of all that gold. The hunt for the next major discovery is well underway, and Klondike Gold's shareholders are strategically positioned. Stay ahead of the majors and follow KlondikeGoldCorp.com.
Great Bear Resources, trading under GBR on the TSX and GTBDF on the OTCQB, is a gold exploration company focused on their wholly owned Dixie Project in the prolific Red Lake Mining District of Canada. Having recently made four major gold discoveries, GBR is now fully funded to drill 90,000 meters through to the year 2020 as part of a very active exploration program. Rob McEwen of McEwen Mining, a Red Lake veteran, is a significant shareholder following a recent $5.7 million investment. To stay up to date, visit greatbearresources.ca.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have Alistair McLeod with us once again. Alistair is a financial analyst at goldmoney.com, and I would really suggest that you go to goldmoney.com at least once a week to catch Alistair's weekly commentary that's there. His essays are they're not stuff of the surface. They go deep. They go into the reasons why things are the way they are. And he has a very good grasp of human nature and why things are the way they are and why governments many times try to fool Mother Nature, in a sense, by passing laws and doing things that are contrary to human nature. Alistair, thanks for joining us again.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Alistair, we want to talk to you about your deeply negative nominal rates recent essay that you wrote at Gold Money. And Alistair, you know, anybody that takes a look at a long-term Treasury rate chart, U.S. Treasury rates, we'll see that since about 1980 or so, every cycle, every credit cycle, saw lower highs and lower lows. And so I'm asking, I would like you to talk about why that has happened. Can you talk about the dynamics as to why we're seeing chronically lower rates since about 1980.
Yes, indeed. I think it's a function of the increase of the quantity of money without much of an increase in actual production. Mm-hmm. So what we have, in effect, is not so much the prices being eroded, but more and more money in the system. And, of course, you see that people, you know, they look at things like velocity of circulation, which actually is a completely meaningless thing. But what that does tell you is there's just more money in the economy. And, you know, as a result, it doesn't take quite such a high rate of interest to suddenly upset the thing, because the other side of that money, of course, is the debt that has been created. And it's the debt that puts the limit, if you like, on how far interest rates can rise before you trigger the crisis in the cycle. And that is why we've had declining peaks of interest mm-hmm. rates ever since the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And we've now got to the point where if we just raise interest rates to, say, 2.5-3%, I'm talking dollars here, yeah. then the whole system begins to fall over because of the debt. I mean, it's just so much debt around now. It's all been created. It hasn't been washed out. And, of course, we cannot afford to have it washed out for the simple reason that no central banker is appointed to bring about conditions that will bankrupt the economy, bankrupt the banks, and make government funding more more expensive. So mm-hmm. they've got themselves, if you like, into this sort of this final trap, which actually, you know, if you read von Mises's earlier works, you know, The Theory of Money and Credit, you would have been able to deduce that this is the sort of thing that we were going to end up with. But what it means, Jay, is that you know, you've got a problem that when it comes to reducing interest rates in order to save the world the next time, your computer model probably says that you need to reduce it by an average of about 5%, going back, seeing what happened last time, the time before, and so uh-huh. on and so forth. So yeah. how do you reduce it from 5% from 2.5? Well, the answer is you can't. You know, you have to go negative. That's what the model tells you. And I mean, fortunately, in a sense, I suppose, you know, central bankers are naturally cautious about having such extreme policies to try and rescue the economy. But the problem they have is they're going to get themselves into a bind, I believe, and I'll say a little bit more about that in a second. But they risk getting themselves into a bind, in a sense, where they think, well, the only option is to go negative. And then that has very, very serious consequences, because it puts the whole of the commodity complex into backwardation. Now, I should draw a distinction between the dollar and the other major currencies, I mean, particularly the euro and the yen. The difference with the dollar is that we price all our international trade, we price our markets in dollars, not in euros or yen. Mm-hmm. So that the ECB and the Bank of Japan can reduce their interest rates into negative territory, putting aside whether this is wise or not, mm-hmm, that's a different right. issue. But the point is they can do it without bankrupting the global financial system. But if America does it, just think on this, everything goes into backwardation. And what that means is there is a huge incentive for us all to buy commodities, to buy, if you like, the things that we usually use, rather than whole dollars. So suddenly we have got the reason to basically get rid of all cash dollars, all dollar deposits. And then what does that do? It basically collapses the purchasing power of the dollar. Now, I don't know whether central bankers actually realize that this is the dynamic that they're now faced with. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we don't even have to go negative to get to that situation. If you remember back to the wake of the Lehman crisis, yes. Interest rates were reduced to zero as part of the monetary package to deal with that. Mm-hmm. Now, having reduced those interest rates down to zero, when it became clear that the whole system wasn't going to fall over, the gold price then rallied strongly from about $740 up to, I think it was $1920 in right. September 2011.
Right.
Now, That was as far as it got. So it went up, it more than doubled. We got to the stage where, you know, it sort of then paused. And then it became clear that there was going to be, at some stage in the future, economic recovery. Now, what that meant was that at some stage in the future, dollar interest rates would start rising. Mm-hmm. Now, from the point of view of the bullion banks in the system, they then moved from the situation where they had to close down their dollar obligations against their gold obligations. So they had to begin to cover those, which mm-hmm. is one of the reasons that the gold price was driven so firmly upwards. And then when they could see that interest rates on the horizon were likely to rise, uh-huh. at that stage, the pressure came off gold.
I see.
We are now in exactly the same situation. And I'm at the moment drafting an article which will go out on Thursday on precisely this point. Because the thing that people just don't seem to realize is that gold has an interest rate. The best way to describe it is time preference.
Yes.
You have some gold. If I want to borrow your gold, you are going to lose possession of that until I return it to you. Basically, you value the possession of the gold more than you value non-possession. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to part with that gold, there is a rate which I would have to pay you in order to persuade you to part with that gold for sure. a period of time which we would agree with us. I think that's pretty uncontentious. But what that does mean is that gold has an interest rate because that time preference is represented by an interest rate. Now, if you also extend that to the dollar has a time preference element. Mm-hmm. and an interest rate. Now, we don't see that in the sense because the central banks have taken over control of the pricing mm-hmm. of interest on the dollar. So we're not allowed to have a time preference on the dollar, except to the extent that the central bank allows us to have one. Mm-hmm. Now, if you compare the two, the time preference rate on gold and the time preference rate on the dollar, if you reduce the time preference rate on the dollar, let us say, call it an interest rate, below a certain level, then obviously, this is going to favor holding gold
sure.
rather than holding the dollar. We put aside all considerations about, unsound money and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Just think in terms of time preference.
Sure.
So we now have a situation where, it makes more sense to hold gold than dollars. Now, the bullion banks who have geared up and are synthetically short of a lot of physical metal have a problem when the dollar rate falls below the gold rate. Mm-hmm. And that more or less is where we are at the moment. If you look at and this is just a rough guide, the forward rate for gold is around about 1.9% per annum. LIBOR is around about 1.9% per annum for a year. So if you take the two together, what have you got? You have got zero for the time preference for gold. So already we're in a situation where the bullion banks are having to switch from having a little bit of gold financing interest rate swaps and arbitrages and all the rest of it in dollars to a situation where they should be closing out their gold obligations.
Mm-hmm.
And if interest rates in the dollar go any lower, they should be holding on to a small pot of dollars in order to buy a larger pot of gold yeah. and other commodities, which also have time preferences.
Sure.
So this is, it's important to grasp this point because we've seen gold now move very rapidly from, in the last few months, very rapidly from sort of 1350, 1360, which was seen as a rock solid barrier, and tonight we're looking at $1,540, and that's over a fairly short period of time. What is happening is that there's the fundamentals that are going on about time preference for gold relative to time preference for dollars. Really? Now we have a problem. How far is this going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the overall economy. I think you and I, we've discussed this so often, can agree that we have come towards the end of the credit cycle, the expansionary yes. phase of the credit cycle, and we are likely to tip into, you know, that sort of periodic recession, which you alluded to by bringing forward the interest rates, you know, the declining interest rate peak
sure.
Story. So we've got that. On top of that, we have got the problem of President Trump's tariffs against China. Mm-hmm. Now, this is exactly the situation we had in 1929 to 1932, which, first of all, knocked Wall Street down top to bottom 35% in October 1929. It recovered somewoot until Smoot-Hawley was actually signed into law by President Hoover, which was, around, I think, around about April, May 1930. And, you know, then, of course, you had the slump in the 30s and all the rest mm-hmm. of it. Now, what nobody has actually researched is the synergistic effect of the trade tariffs on top of a turning credit cycle. Now, if you conceptually put those two things together, you can come up with an explanation as to why the depression, firstly the fall in Wall Street, but also the depression in the 1930s was so deep. Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm right in drawing that empirical evidence towards us, then what we face is not just a sort of downturn in the global economy, which can be corrected by, you know, a temporary expansion of the quantity of money, you know, a little bit of QE and maybe knocking a half or, a point off interest rates.
Right.
It's a lot more serious than that. Now, if it is more serious than that, then our negative interest rate play is going to become a real possibility, first in the Eurozone and also in Japan and various other central banks like the Swiss, the Danish, and the Swedish, who are already there in a small way.
Yes.
They're going to go deeply negative. And the pressure on the Fed to not only go down to zero, but maybe go that little bit further, is going to become intolerable.
Yeah.
Now, then we have this problem. If you're a bullion bank and you're sitting there, you know, you can see that interest rates are already going against your operations, whereby you gear up on a small amount of gold. That is already being killed in the current situation.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the outlook? Well, the outlook is it's going to get considerably worse. It's not like 2012, where suddenly you could begin to say, do you know, the Cyprus crisis and all the rest of it, we've gone through that, and actually we have survived. The global economy is going to survive. Dollar interest rates at some stage in the future are going to go up. We can hang on. We can bash mm-hmm. the gold price. We can get back into business because, you know, the problem is now dealt with. Mm-hmm. The problem this time is not dealt with. The problem is going to get worse and worse and worse. So what do the bullion banks do? They have to close down every outstanding gold liability. Otherwise, they are likely to go bust.
Wow.
And that is why the gold price is so strong. It's got nothing to do with, at this stage, nothing to do with the charts are looking good, or there's so many thousands of dollars, you know, in per ounce of gold, yeah. Forget all that.
So
it's the banks that have the trouble.
So the bullion banks are covering their shorts. They're starting to cover their shorts. Is that what you're saying?
They're beginning to do it. I think you'll find the big boys are beginning to do it. Whether the smaller ones have actually caught on to this, I mean, they must do to an extent, simply because, well, for a start, they see the price run.
Yeah,
and this is something which is new, and they will be looking. I mean, because you know, if you've got to pay an amount to borrow gold, why are you doing it? You're doing it to get into an arbitrage into something else,
right?
And you know, if your arbitrage is a dead loss, then all you've got is a gold liability, and that's the thing that is driving the price.
Very interesting. Well, Alistair, I'd like to explore just a little bit more the backwardation comment that you made. Why commodities will go into backwardation? Because the currency becomes worth less. And also, why, if you can help me understand again, the difference between the U.S. owning the world's reserve currency and the euro, for example. why we can't do it. We can't go negative, whereas they can.
Well, it's not quite as you say. Basically, the reason that there will be a backwardation across the whole commodity complex is because you have negative interest rates. Uh-huh. Remember that every item there is, every good, has an implied time preference.
Sure.
Yeah. So you know, it's not just gold. Gold, in its monetary sense, actually acts as a proxy for all the other commodities.
Sure.
And incidentally, anything that you or I might buy if we were using gold as money. So the problem then is that if you've got negative interest rates, instead of the price of copper being, let's say, $2,000 a ton, the price for a month delivery is $2,020 a ton.
Uh-huh.
The price for a year's delivery is $2,100 ton. No, what happens is the price today is $2,200. The price, let's say, for a month's delivery is $2,100. So
right.
It's got a backwardation. But the backwardation isn't because people are buying copper. The backwardation is forced on the market by the monetary policy of the Fed.
I see.
Now, getting back to your question as to why it's a dollar and nothing else, it's really quite simple. All commodities internationally are priced in dollars.
Priced in dollars. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Not euros.
So the euros can do it, forget, you know, and they will create their own problems, but they won't necessarily upset the apple cart in the way the dollar would certainly do so.
I got you now. I understand that. That's very, very interesting. Well, I do have to ask you, with the few minutes left, we got maybe 5-6 minutes left here, Alistair, to comment a little bit, if you could, on the news that Bank of England Governor Mark Carney made at Jackson Hole on, I guess it was on Monday.
Yeah,
no, it was last weekend. It was last Friday, I guess it was.
Yeah, yeah.
In which he suggested that he made a speech in which he said that the world's reliance on the dollar won't hold and needs to be replaced by a new international monetary and financial system based on many more global currencies. Now, I kind of followed his logic. I didn't read the 23-page memo, but I've read commentaries about it. What are your thoughts about it? Do you think that he's seeing what you're seeing here to an extent?
No, he's seeing a very different thing. Really, the burden of his speech was really quite simple, and that is that America is becoming a smaller and smaller part of the global GDP because of the emerging markets have now, or what we used to call emerging markets, have now become so important, and it's a trend which is likely to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And he reckoned, I think it was by 2030 or something, but that the American economy will have fallen from something like 40 or 50% down to about 25% of global GDP. Yet the one currency that everybody is forced to use is the dollar. And so what you have got is, in effect, a mismatch between the currency use and the actual importance of the American economy. Now, so I think his case was quite simple. He didn't know how to go with it. I mean, you know, he sort of very fairly said, you know, sort of basket of currencies, Libra, what, you know, technology might come into it, and so on. But I think behind it, there is a very serious concern in the Bank of International Settlements. And by that, I mean the mainstream non-American central bankers, probably the American ones as well, that to have a loose cannon like Donald Trump running around trying to bully the Fed into monetary policies which could well be wrong, I think they are very worried about this, the implications, particularly for the rest of the world, because, you know, if America just runs her monetary policies for herself, then that is going to create huge, huge strains.
Right. Because as the world's reserve currency, we have had to do things that you could argue were not in the best interest of the United States, just simply to make sure there's enough dollars out there all the time. We had to run chronic trade deficits, as I see it, in order to ensure enough liquidity for the dollar to remain as the world's reserve currency. And if you try to reverse that, which Trump is trying to do in a way for his constituents in the Midwest, which have been hurt most, I think it doesn't work very well. Well, just to, real quickly here, also, I got another bit of news today, Alistair. I'd like you to comment on Bill Dudley, formerly with the New York Fed, has urged Fed Chairman Powell apparently to prevent Trump's reelection. I'm not sure how he would do that other than just to maybe tighten the monetary system and throw us into a heck of a recession or depression. But what are your thoughts about that? You just sort of alluded to the loose cannon aspect. Do you think that's what Bill Dudley is thinking?
I think that is what he's thinking, and I think there's an element in it too I don't know what his political thoughts are, but if he is a Keynesian, and I think it's a fair bet he's
most
a Keynesian,
likely he is,
then basically he is a socialist, if you like, emotionally, and if he was in this country, we'd probably say that is a Remainer.
yeah, for sure.
So yes, I think he's anti what Trump represents. Basically, it just can't stand the idea of a Trump. I mean, just the same as Remainers can't stand the idea of going out of the EU. It's something that they just can't get their heads around.
All right, real quickly, I think I've got a minute here yet. Jim Rickards talks about an SDR at the IMF, a one world currency. Maybe it has some gold attached to it, but it'd be a basket of, or maybe other commodities too. Where do you think, how do you think this is going to play out, Alistair? Because clearly the system is broken and it can't go on much longer. We have 30 seconds left.
Yeah, I think that's part of the theme behind Carney's speech too, that the system is broken. And I hear from all sorts of quarters people struggling to come up with an answer on this. I don't believe SDRs are the answer. SDRs are just, if you like, printing multiple currencies in the weightings of an SDR. It is more inflationism. That's all it is. And by the way, gold is banned from the SDR. It cannot be part of it.
Oh, okay. Well, then we get back to the same old problem, don't we? The same old big lie that time preference doesn't matter, which is at the heart of it, isn't it, Alistair? The idea that time preference, I mean, Keynes denied time preference, and there was another, you address in your article, the origins of that great lie. So people should go and read Alistair's article, that one, and every week, go to goldmoney.com to read what Alistair MacLeod is writing. He's on this show so often because I find him to be one of the most interesting and insightful writers that I read. Thanks for being with us again, Alistair. We'll look forward to having you again as soon as possible. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Jay.
All right, folks. Next week we have David Stockman with us, and I believe Michael Oliver will be back as well. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.